Oh man, I wish I had a fairy godmother to help me with my fit. It's looking kind of busted right now.
Hey you, cutie with no hoodie. It's your fairy godmother.
Damn, you mean a fairy god me? Because we sound just alike. Am I having an insecure Issa Rae in the mirror moment?
Yeah, whatever, don't worry about it. We got you covered, okay? So we gonna make sure that you are looking hot this winter when you go out to have a ball.
Okay. So what y'all got over there?
Well, I am the Millennials Anonymous DTLR Villa Fairy, say that 10 times fast, and they got you. They got matching sets from Puma, Nike, Juicy Couture, and so much more.
Okay.
All you gotta do is go to millennials.com/shops and click on DTLR Villa, and you can get the savings today.
Okay, let's go.
Now, hurry back,
because my car's gonna turn into a pumpkin if I don't come back on time?
No, Millennials Anonymous is on, so let's go.
Millennial, what?
Pray a trust.
You are watching us from the last room
they've ever owned tonight. Millennial, what? My name is Lisa, and I'm a fucking millennial.
I did not.
Because with Pharrell, we made it out some shit. Pharrell. Yeah, you know we run the world, right?
I'm saying in Tennessee, I know it's Texas.
I just want y'all to hold it.
That don't even sound right. That don't even sound like me. Mm-mm.
The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed are the individual guest's own and do not represent the views, thoughts, and opinions of Millennials Anonymous or MAPS Media. The material and information presented here is for entertainment purposes only and not meant to malign any person, place, thing, or group. MAPS Media's name and all forms and abbreviation are the property of its owner, and its use does not imply endorsement or opposition of any specific organization, product, or service. This is purely entertainment, folks. Now let's get it. Hey everybody, welcome back to a brand new episode of Millennials Anonymous Podcast. Yes, it is your girl, Lise Winnie, and I am a fucking millennial. So we're gonna get this party started. So right, and so very quickly, because we have so much to celebrate today. Mm-hmm. This is the This Sucks episode, redundant, because I like it like that. Yes. You'll know why it's called the This Sucks episode in a minute, but there's a lot of things that are sucking. Okay. And there's a lot of things that aren't. So first things first, obey your thirst, drink Sprite. We have dos convidados on today. Yes, we got two guests. Mm-hmm. It's been a little minute since we've had a guest, but we have two guests. See, I came back with two, okay? So I'm excited about this. So the reason why it's This Sucks episode is because the two guests that we have are creators of the film and starring in the film, the feature film, the upcoming feature film, titled This Sucks. And I'm excited to see this because I actually got to see the unreleased trailer, and I'm excited to actually view it because I've not seen a film done quite this way. So the film chronicles a young woman who went through the global pandemic. We all did. We all fought over toilet paper and apple juice with an elderly woman on aisle 9. We all did it. I'm ashamed, but we did it nonetheless. But listen, we were all going through something, and I think all of us felt a little bit of depression. And this film chronicles a woman of color who is going through depression through this pandemic, the global pandemic, which I've not seen anybody actually do this in this way. So I'm highly intrigued to see how this all comes to be. So we're speaking to the creator, the writer, director, producer of This Sucks, Cameron A. Mitchell. So he's on here today. And we also will be talking to Miss April Denise Scott, who is the lead actress. She plays Jess in this film. And we got into the nitty gritty. So we really dug down in the deep. We talked about this film, and I think you guys are gonna really love it. It's a dark comedy, just like me. I'm a walking dark comedy. I love it, okay? Love it. Yum, 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 yum. Delicioso, love it. So we're gonna talk about that a little bit later on in the show. But now, let's talk about one other reason why this is the This Sucks episode. We're gonna talk a little bit about Kanye, because I know I talked about Kanye last week, but somebody reached out to me and they brought something to my attention and they were asking me about it. And it's not so much about Kanye as much as it's about the people that support Kanye or the people who are baffled by Kanye. So we're going to talk about that because it kind of runs through, because by the time you get this in the United States, midterms will be a week away. Mm-hmm. And speaking of midterms,
You ain't got the answers, man.
So we're going to talk about that, and it kind of ties into that a little bit. It all goes together. Trust me, it goes some kind of way. It fits in the puzzle. But you know what doesn't suck? It is All Hallows Eve. It's Halloween today. My very favorite episode. Favorite holiday. Because I am a nerd adjacent. And the reason why I always say I'm nerd adjacent, because I don't have the level of intellect that I think it takes to be a nerd. But I'm like, remember, I always say, like, the Revenge of the Nerds, Booger, I'm not nasty, okay? I'm not nasty. I don't dig up my nose. I don't eat them. But you know how he was nerd adjacent? He was with the nerds, but I don't know if he actually had a talent. Did he? I have to go back and watch it. He might have. I don't remember. But I don't think he was as smart as the others, okay? One of them didn't fit, and I think it was him. But I'm just saying, I'm nerd adjacent, so I love some cosplay. Give me a costume, and I will wear it. And this year, I was kind of indecisive about what I wanted to be. I started to be, you know, I am feeling House of the Dragons. Now, I read Blood and Fire, which by George Martin, which the actual show is so different from the book. I'm like, what? But I love the show nonetheless, okay? So I'm watching this, so I know people are like, you read the book, what do you think? I'm like, it's different for me too. So this is like me watching something totally different. I'm like, I don't know, let's see where this goes. Like, I don't know, let's see where it goes. So I was gonna be the queen of Baltimore's seven crab seasonings. There you go. That's what I would have been. Lisa Valorian, the first of her name. The queen of Baltimore's seven crab spices.
On Dragon Bank?
But I decided not to do that. And then I was like, I was going to be a cat. I was going to be Catwoman, and I was going to be a cat. And then I was like, a sexy cat. Because, like, I feel like you can, you know, I did a whole PSA on this. Like, you don't have to be a slutty everything. Okay. So I was going to dress up as a sexy cat and be hypocritical. And I was going to buy a cat suit, but then I realized that I'm going to look like Garfield because I'm hefty. And I was like, I don't want to look like Garfield. And I don't want that for myself. Plus, it's plastic, like latex, spandex, leather. And I was like, I grew up doing Smokey the Bear. Don't start forest fires. And I know my thighs would do that. I'm not trying to do that. I don't want to be that. No. So I said, nah. No. So I decided on a mermaid. Not the Little Mermaid, a mermaid, because I'm cheap. Okay? Very cheap. And I did not want to pay the bag for that. So I couldn't bring myself to pay that kind of money. So I was like, I'll just give me a mermaid tail and like a shirt. I can't wear like the bra top because I'm hefty. But I was like, I'll just get a shirt, like a lacy type shirt. That's mermaid-esque, right? It's mermaid adjacent. So I was like, this sucks a little bit, but we're going to make it work. So that's exactly what I did. And so I'm going to be a mermaid. And I don't want to hear people say, not my mermaid. Listen, we've had this conversation about the Little Mermaid being black. They have stories of African stories about mermaids in Africa. And in the islands. So it's not, mermaids are not just for Nordic regions. Plus, if you really read the story of the Little Mermaid by Christian Hans, it's horrifying. She kills the prince and his wife. And every time she walks on land, it's like she feels daggers. She sells her soul and then walks and wanders around soulless. It's horrifying. She ends up dying. Like, it's a horrible book. And that's why I'm like, I don't understand why you're not my mermaid. If this is part of your heritage, I don't know if you're half cod, maybe half salmon, but this is a fish woman. And as far as we know, they don't exist. So how is this a part of your I'm going to leave it alone. I'm going to leave it be. Okay? I'm going to leave it alone. But I am going to be a mermaid. Okay? I'm going to be the Great Value Walmart version of the Little Mermaid, which I am okay with. I love a good Great Value Walmart selection. And if you see a hefty mermaid, just say hello because it's me. Okay, yeah! Now leave it alone. Now I'm gonna move on away from it. Yeah, because the cat costume that I got, since I was being cheap and I didn't want to buy that spandex thing, it was a dominatrix outfit, which I found out later after I bought it. And I was like, I didn't want to walk around looking like, what are you? Are you a dominatrix? It's like, no. If you have to be asked, what are you on Halloween? You failed. Mission failed. Fatality. Okay? You have failed the mission. And I didn't want that for me. It brings back memories of my childhood because I grew up with no money. I tell you, I was a cashier 1 year. I can't. But nonetheless. So we have a lot to talk about because a lot of things are just bonkers, bananas, crazy right now. And so we're going to talk about it. But before we do that, we're going to get into this interview with Cameron Mitchell and Miss April Denise Scott for the upcoming feature film, This Sucks, which I can't wait to see. Her depression manifests itself in a red demon form in a Christmas sweater. So it's quite interesting to see because Christmas sweaters make you want to hug, you know, it makes you want to hug and snuggle. So it's conflicting. But nonetheless, it's her ex-boyfriend, which is, it could have just been her ex-boyfriend and it would have been terrifying nonetheless. And it's Halloween, so it kind of goes together. So let's get into it. Let's get into this interview now. All right. So we have some amazing guests today. We're going to be talking about the dark comedy. It's just in time for Netflix and chill season. We have both director and lead actress of This Sucks. It's a dark comedy about a makeup artist and her roommate and her conservative ex-boyfriend struggling to make it through the quarantine, which I know all of us probably can relate in some way, shape, form, or another. Each of them has a demon that follows them around. And it's the physical manifestation of their depression, which I think we all have one that follows us now after the quarantine. And we're going to welcome author, writer, producer, director, and co-founder of Tequila Mockingbird Productions, Cameron A. Mitchell. He is accompanied by the beautiful and talented singer, dancer, and actress, April Denise Scott. How are you two doing today?
I'm doing great.
I'm glad to speak with you both. It sounds quite interesting, and given the fact that the whole world experienced a very similar experience all at the same time, I want to ask Cameron, so where did the idea come from to kind of come up with this film, and why a dark comedy?
So it's actually sort of a weird, long, convoluted road for how this movie came to be, so I'll give kind of the short version. The short version is during the early, 2020 period, I was struggling with a lot of things. I was depressed. I was upset. I got really sick. I had a really, really bad case of COVID that had me down for about 2 months. And then I started going to these protest events, and I was kind of getting to know like Los Angeles activism, LA politics, things like that, and just seeing a lot of the issues that were here that were, kind of being given light in, that period of time. And so I started just sort of squirreling on these ideas. And at the same time, our makeup artist, Sadie, moved in with me. She's my new roommate. And she was showing me her portfolio of all these demon creatures that she'd done. And so I kind of had that in my head. And an actress friend reached out and she said she was looking to see if we were doing any productions or anything like that, or if we could potentially shoot, like a small scene for her reel. And she and I were talking about what that small scene could be. And I said, well, give me an hour. Let me write something and I'll show you kind of what I had in mind. And so I wrote this scene where this character is sort of doom scrolling on her phone, listening to the news. She looks down. She's out of toilet paper. She looks up and this red hand gives it to her. And it's this demon. And that ultimately became one of our opening scenes, was that little scene that I had written initially for this other thing entirely that ended up not happening. But everything kind of came together with Sadie's makeup, and we had this location, and I had this idea for, these people in this house, because that's kind of what everybody was doing. We were all just sitting inside, and everything just sort of came together from there.
Yes, and I think we all had the same issue with the toilet paper. It was like a whole, we all had,
I was not fully conscious during that period, but I remember talking about it.
Sorry, we could laugh about it now, but
yes, I didn't die, so it's funny now.
Oh, yeah, gosh. We can laugh about it now, but then it was a whole thing. So I do want to kind of elaborate on that a little bit. Can you explain the film in and of itself? Who is the film following, and kind of like lay it out for the audience?
Yeah, sure. So April here plays Jess, who is our main character, and she's a makeup artist. She wants to be an influencer. She has this, we don't say YouTube, but it's essentially YouTube. She has this YouTube following where she does these makeup tutorials to talk about these creatures and designs and stuff that she makes. And a lot of what Jess has been experiencing at the start of the film is kind of similar to what I experienced. You know, she was also very sick. She was also kind of horrified by a lot of the stuff that would happen at these protest events. And so she changes her instead of talking about makeup, she starts talking about social justice things and activism and stuff like that. And at the start of the film, she's in this very deep, deep, deep hole of depression. She can't get out of bed. She doesn't want to do the dishes. One of her best, she lives with her two best friends, and one of them goes back to their hometown, Chicago, because of the pandemic. And this other girl moves in, and Jess does not like this other girl because Carly is very kind of blissfully clueless and oblivious. And, you know, she's very, very kind of on the surface, she seems very simple. And obviously there's a lot more to her, and, you know, they eventually do connect in a way, but Jess is really struggling. And so she has this demon that follows her around, and he's always there, and he's always saying, you know, oh, you're gaining weight, and oh, you know, you're stupid, and all these like horrible things. It's basically the voice inside her own head. And he happens to look like her conservative ex-boyfriend, Jake. He's played by the same actor, Michael Hooper. And so we see Jake a few times throughout the film just as himself, and we see kind of what his life is. And that connects us to this demon that's following her around and kind of explains why he looks like her ex-boyfriend.
Awesome, awesome. So I want to ask Miss Scott. So yeah. I was taking a look at your Instagram, and I believe this may be like your first like lead role. What drew you to the role of Jess?
Well, I guess the fact that it was so relatable. She's mixed like I am. The story seemed like it was meant for me.
It was.
Yeah, being a Black woman, it has its struggles within itself. But I think being mixed is a different experience, especially if you're being raised by the non-Black side.
Okay.
It can be tough. It can be hard because you don't have that sense of a community, even though in your core, in your being, you know what's right and what's wrong. So, but you're being raised otherwise, to think otherwise, it causes a lot of insecurities. And, you know, I can relate to the relationship she has with her mother. Her mother was brought up to think one way because my mother is South Korean, and Jess's mother is Caucasian, and you know, they have a certain way of thinking, and they love their babies. Like my mom loves me, and just his mom loves her. But it's fear of it's. I like to say that it's kind of they didn't really know what they were getting themselves into having Black babies in America. They didn't really know what they were getting themselves into. So I think a lot of forgiveness has to happen because there's a lot of resentment based on that. But the forgiveness has to come from just realizing that her mom just is doing the best she can with what she has, you know? It was very, very relatable. And also the relationship with her ex-boyfriend. I mean, I went through the same thing where I was in a biracial relationship, and it was tough because there are things that my partner didn't notice that I would tell him, and he would think it's all in my head and downplay it. And so those things can cause insecurities when you don't have a support system around you that can understand what you're going through. Yeah, it can cause a lot of mental health issues. So I can understand what Jess was going through. So I felt like I had to do it. I had to.
Was there a bit of an adjustment since you guys, the both of you, it was a 9-day, it was quite fast. So for you two, like this your first what was that like for the both of you?
Wow. Okay. So where do I start? Okay. luckily, I really do want to thank life or God or, you know, because I was built for it in a way because I'd been in performing arts since I was like 5. So I know what it's like to be on set for long days and, you know, you have to sacrifice your time and basically stop your life to be on set. So luckily I kind of had a mental idea of what I was getting myself into, but it's still grueling because, you know, being an actor, it takes all of your energy. You can't be on autopilot. You have to be very present and aware mentally, physically, spiritually in every way. So it can be tough to have to produce that constant energy on, like, I mean, how long, Cameron, how long were we on set? What, like, how long were our days? I don't even remember. It was a blur.
It was a 9-day shoot. It was, I actually lived at the house during the shoot. And so
that's right.
the day before, I think, or maybe even the day before that, I can't remember exactly, but I kissed my cats goodbye and I drove up to Santa Clarita and I had a little bag packed and I just stayed in one of the rooms up in the house because it was our producer Teresa's house. And she was moving back into it at the end of that month. And so it just happened to be empty. So I was like, oh, okay. So we have this house available. Each day, I mean, the shoot days, I'm actually pretty proud because we have a really great team that we've been working with for a long time now, at Tequila Mockingbird. And we went over a few days, but never for very long. I think our longest day was, I think, like 13 hours or so, 13 and a half, maybe. And that was because of, you know, that demon makeup took a lot of time. You know, the non-shoot parts, that demon makeup took a lot of time. And so there were several days where I think you had to come in super early on your demon day, April. I know Michael did a couple of times. And so I rolled out of bed at 3 a.m. Sadie was our makeup artist, was also sitting in the house, and she did the same. And then our assistant makeup, Nicole, would show up at like 3:45, and then the actor would show up at 4. And then, you know, we'd be shooting at 9 or something like that. And so it was long days. And then we'd go until, you know, the typical 12 hours, sometimes a little longer. But we never went, you know, we didn't have any of these like crazy 15, 17 hour shoot days. We wanted to make sure everybody had decent turnaround time. And so we were doing, you know, some of our days we'd start at 10 and end at 10 and things like that. So it's like we had to make some compromises with the shot list and we had to make some changes as we were going, but that's always been the case for every project I've ever worked on. So I'm pretty happy with what we were able to do and what the team was able to do.
Awesome. I can imagine with that, the makeup, they probably found that red makeup in crevices in their face, probably even to this day.
Throughout the house, Teresa still will send pictures sometimes and be like, I think Michael walked through this hallway because there's a red. Okay.
I'm still trying to get it out of some of my clothes. It transfers.
Oh, yeah. No, we're finding it in the wardrobe, too. Like, we had these special sweaters that we had to be very careful with because they would get red. And then we have all this like red stuff all over the sweaters. And it's like, well, how do we get this out by, you know, 9 a.m?
I could imagine. Mm-hmm. That sounds so grueling. But you actually do Cameron, you have worked on horror films. Like, how much of that did you put into, although this is, you know, more of a comedy, how much of that did you actually put into this film?
A decent amount. I love horror films, and I think a lot of people who know me are kind of surprised that as my first feature, this isn't a horror film. you know, I really love the monsters, and I'm really, really happy because our sound designer, Anita, and our composer, Charlotte, the three of us had this mission. We wanted to make it seem like, in the beginning, it's a horror film. And so for the first 10 minutes or so, you really don't know what's happening because you've seen that Jess has this demon. You've seen there's something going on, but we don't really explain what. And then kind of the twist comes along that, oh, it's kind of a silly comedy and he's not, you know, he's a monster, but not really in the same sense of the monster. So I got to put a little bit of my love for horror in there, and I'm pretty happy with that.
Awesome. Because I was wondering that. I was like, I wonder if there's any horror.
When I was talking about the sweaters, Andrew, one of our other producers, is here, and he ran this over. This is our Christmas sweater.
Oh, you did not bring that to show.
Yeah. So we had more of each one than people. Some people took them home at the end of the set. So this was.
I still have mine.
Okay. Yours is awesome. I love the one that you had.
I should go grab mine. That was just, my. What does mine have ghosts on it? I gotta wear it. The holidays are coming around.
Yeah.
See. The combo sweater. The gift that keeps on giving. You can wear it always. Now, Jess, you mentioned this, or you hit on this a little bit, since it sounds like there's some social justice in the film.
Yes,
very as much so. A Black and Korean woman, how important was it to for you to portray a woman of color in a role of vulnerability, which is not something that we often see? This is a role that we don't often see women of color play. So how important was that?
It's so funny you ask it that way, because that's exactly why I thought it was very important, because we don't see a Black woman struggling through mental health. I mean, to be honest, I've gone through my own mental health issues. I still am. And some things you're just born with. And, but being a Black woman, even though I was raised by my Korean side of the family, I grew up in a poor Black community. So, based on where you live, that's the place you're going to go to school. So my school was pretty hood. I'll just say that.
Okay.
And, when you're going through mental health struggles, to me, what I noticed in my school, not speaking for all schools, so this is my school at the time. If you're someone of color, they automatically assume you're stupid, or you're not trying hard enough, or you're not applying yourself, or it's a behavior quality, and nobody actually takes the time to think, well, she's showing up for all of her classes, she's participating, she's very polite, she's sweet, so why is she not getting good grades? Like, why is she struggling? Nobody will really look into that. And as I got older, and meeting new people, like going to college and, working different jobs, I had friends that were, Caucasian, and seeing that the way we grew up, it's completely different. I would see, they would talk to me in their community, how they would always have psychological help growing up as kids. And, they almost had too much access to things. And I've met a lot of people that said that they were medicated at a young age because their parents thought they had this, that, and the third. And it's crazy how it's so open in that community. But our community, even in the Korean community, we're not taught to look into mental health. And I think because we ignore it, we actually pass down mental health issues genetically. Mm-hmm. So that's why I felt like it had to be addressed. Everyone's struggling with something. Everyone needs help figuring it out. And I think in my Asian community, and definitely how I was raised by a military Black father, it's, turn off your feelings, do what you have to do. Mm-hmm. That doesn't make your feelings go away. That doesn't make them go away. Suppressing them, they'll come out somewhere in an unhealthy way. And that's what I experienced growing up, is people that were supposed to look after me unleashing their mental health in unhealthy ways because they were taught not to deal with it. That's something that I did not want for myself. I don't want for possibly my future kids. So that's something that it needs to be out there. It has to. It's okay. It's okay to get help if you need help, because it's helped me a lot. I've been in therapy for years. I've done what I've had to do to get to know myself and what's really going on with me. And I can honestly say at this point, based on, I wouldn't say I've had like a hard childhood, but I had a rough childhood. And I would say that there's no way I could be okay right now without getting psychological help. There was no way. There was a point where I hit depression really hard, and there was no way, nothing else was going to help me until I got actual help. So I just don't want the people in my community to get to the point where I was at and feel like they can't go to that resource. You can. It's okay. It just wasn't given to us when we were young. It's built that way.
Agreed. So Cameron, was that a choice, like a deliberate choice to find a person of color to put in this role?
Yeah. I mean, it ultimately, I mean, at the most, I guess, basic level, the woman who reached out to me initially when I first conceived of this scene, she was a Black woman. And so that was how it started. But as I was writing the film and as I was kind of, you know, putting everything together, you know, there's so much to do on a big level and on a small level, as far as mental health, like April was just saying, and on, you know, so much in this country is broken on a bigger level. And so much of that is related to race and racism. And it just kind of seemed, as I was going along, it just sort of seemed sort of like the right thing to do to keep this character as a Black woman, to kind of be the, tell the most authentic story we could tell. And, you know, April was super, super key to that, because obviously I don't have that experience. I've not lived that same life. I haven't experienced those same things to the same degree. And so she and I had a lot of conversations after she came on, just to sort of make sure that, like, you know, down to lines of dialogue, is this something how Jess would say it, to the bigger things, you know, is this how Jess would feel? Is this what her mom would do? Is this, you know, I wanted to make sure that, that we were telling the best story that we could tell, and that we were being authentic to that. And I think we pulled it off. At least yeah, I hope, knock on wood.
Oh, it was a great experience. And I feel like the way the process was between you and I, Cameron, is like, that's the way it should be. Mm-hmm. It's just like, if you're not that person, if you haven't experienced those things, people have to do their research. They can't assume. So I loved our process. He always wanted to make sure, is this realistic to your own experience? Because I just can't relate. I need to understand, you know, I loved that. That made it so much more comfortable for mm-hmm. me to express what's really going on deep down. Because, I mean, nowadays, it's so microaggressive that it's easy to go right over people's heads. And it's just mm-hmm. like all of those little things have to be pointed out and noticed. And I understand, like, having my friends, my Caucasian friends, the world was taught to tell them yes. And it's hard for them to see anything other than that. It's been, what is the word, cloaked over for them. So I see the innocence in that too. But okay. The fact that they have to realize that too. It's all about awareness. That's all it's about, is just like, be aware of your position and the fact that you don't understand somebody else's position, but you want to.
Yeah.
You know?
That's all we really can do. And that's all we really can ask. But speaking of which, because Cameron, you guys have been able to help so many, you know, content creators, and with Tequila Mockingbird Productions, can you tell us a little bit about how that got started and what it is?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's Tequila Mockingbird is me and two partners, Andrew and Teresa. And we got started a few years back. We did a project together. We liked working together. So we figured, okay, let's do more. And so we did the 48-hour film competition, where we needed a team name. And I came up with Tequila Mockingbird Productions. And that ended up really kind of, the name itself really kind of resonated with people. People laughed, people thought it was funny, people remembered it. And so, you know, moving forward, as we would do short films and things like that, we kind of kept that name, and we started building a logo and building a brand. And we would notice at film festivals that, you know, people would see it and they'd laugh, or they go, oh, Tequila Mockingbird, that's funny. And so when it came time to start a proper production company, we just sort of figured, well, you know, it's not broken. So let's keep it. Let's be Tequila Mockingbird Productions, because we were moving towards a point where we were getting ready to do a feature. And we knew that you needed some kind of, you know, you need legal backing. Basically, you need that LLC or corporation to get that done, because when you're talking features, you're talking money in and money out. And for something like that, you don't want to be personally liable. And so for a while, we were just kind of doing what we could do to build up our own portfolio. But also, you know, we really enjoy helping new creators and sort of showing them the ropes about the very basic levels of filmmaking, because a lot of people don't have that experience and they don't really know. And, you know, you can watch a movie and think, oh, that's pretty easy to do. But then the smallest things are so hard, like, you know, sound design, footsteps, for instance. No one thinks about the footsteps, but there's a lot of work that goes into creating sounds. Or in the edit, you know, we have a scene where two characters walk past each other, and we had to really finesse that both on set shooting it and in the edit to make it look natural. And so it's just these small things that you don't really think about. And so we took a lot of pride in taking on these clients who were first-time filmmakers, or maybe they'd made something before, but now they were kind of ready for something a little bigger, and helping, you know, giving them the support they needed to tell their stories. And then this sort of became a natural extension of that, making This Sucks. We're making another documentary right now called Driven, about the bodybuilder Tony Pearson, and my partner Andrew is directing that. And so we're building something. And the goal for me, at least, is to, you know, continue both to make my own projects, but also to help people who, you know, are underserved or underrepresented or having a harder time breaking into the industry, because it's a really hard industry to break into. And, you know, I've been in LA for about 9 years, or a little more than 9 years now, and I'm just now getting to this point where I've made my first, you know, very small independent feature. And so I would love to, you know, pay it forward to the people who both have helped me, but also the people who might need help.
That's awesome. And I was reading about you guys, and you guys have done some really, really awesome things. Can you tell us when the film actually will be released? How can people watch it, view it, pay for it, do all of those things?
So the short answer is I don't actually know yet. The slightly longer answer is we are finishing up these last few pieces of post-production. And once it's done, then we're going to try and approach a distribution deal. But because this is my first feature, it's kind of everyone involved, our first feature, we can't have those conversations really until it's done. So I have some pretty high hopes that we're going to be able to put it out in the world and that I'll be able to give you that answer. But right now we're just kind of nose to the grindstone, finishing up color correction and VFX. Those are our last two things. And then we're going to try and put it out in the world. Because I feel like there's an audience for this movie. There's a lot of different audiences, you know, at the most basic level, like April said, so many people can relate to this, you know, this mental health struggle, and especially, you know, a mental health struggle compounded with everything that's going on in, you know, the last couple years. I feel like there's people who want to watch this movie, and we want to give it to them in such a way that, you know, as many people can see it as possible.
Awesome. Awesome. Definitely. And I want you guys to tell people how they can follow you. I know, you know, April, you dance, and you, I was looking on your Instagram.
Ridiculous.
You're a singer. Can you tell people how they can follow you and support you?
Yes, yes. Thank you so much for that. Yes. If you want to follow me, my Instagram is April Denise Scott. And I just actually opened up a more personal Instagram. So that's just going to be for my performing arts. If you want to see more of my fitness, I'm going to start vlogging YouTube, because I did a vote on social media and everybody wants to see more of my processes and how things are done behind the scenes. So I have a more personal Instagram, april.living.life. So yeah, you guys can follow me there if you want to.
Awesome. And Cameron?
Yeah, I'm on Instagram too. I'm at the Communist, which is a very old middle school joke, which I've just been riding into the ground at this point. We also have a Tequila Mockingbird production Instagram. It's called Tequila Mockingbird Prod. And so either one of those you can see. I tend to post more on my personal one as far as updates for the film go. But yeah, feel free to check either of those out.
And your website?
Our website is tequilamockingbird.productions or tmockingbird.com. Either one will take you. I usually use tmockingbird.com. And you can check out a little sliver of the film at thissucksmovie.com.
All right. It sounds good. This sounds like a film that is for everyone. Everyone went through the quarantine. We made it out on the other side, and we all experienced some levels of anxiety, depression, or whatever, when we all went through all the things we went through. So make sure you guys check this film out. It's This Sucks, starring Miss April Denise Scott, written and produced and all of the things. I'm just going to say all of the things.
Of the things. Not all of them. I had some help. But definitely.
Almost.
Mr. Cameron Mitchell. So I appreciate you both for being here. And I will be looking forward to seeing this film.
Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. I enjoyed it. All right. I want to thank Mr. Cameron Mitchell and Miss April Denise Scott for coming through. Amazing guests. We'll keep you posted with the information for the upcoming film, This Sucks. So speaking of This Sucks, let's talk about it. The upcoming election. Do you want me to put on my news voice so we can talk about it? Here at 11, we're going to talk about the upcoming midterm election that has over 300 election deniers on the ballots.
Come on, now, man.
Let's get to it. Let's be certain. In all seriousness, let's talk about it. I'm a little nervous. And when we're looking at it, that's absolutely true. There's over 300 Republicans who believe the election was stolen who are running for public office. 300. And we're talking about, it's, you know, people who will oversee the election. We're talking about governors. We're talking about senators. We are talking about people that could actually change how we vote in the future. When you have people that only believe the election is right when you win, that's a problem. That is a problem. We got 99 problems and election is one. It's a problem. When you look at, let's take Arizona.
Don't be rude.
Arizona's governor's race is a crucial one, given the fact that Carrie Lake, a former TV anchor and former Democrat turned Republican and staunch Trump supporter and firm election denier, is running against Katie Hobbs, the Democrat there, whose office actually got broken into. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they're still working on the motives and seeing what and why they actually did that, because they don't believe anything actually was stolen, as far as I know. And you have people who are intimidating voters in minority neighborhoods, poor minority neighborhoods in Maricopa County. You have people who are in full tactical gear. Their faces are covered. They have weapons. They're following people. They're recording people after they're voting. They're coming up to people after they vote. Like, it's a lot of intimidation. And the amount of voter intimidation and voter suppression is crazy.
Come on, man.
Crazy. And I don't know if people are talking about it in the ways that they should. You mean to tell me this is America? We not new to this. We true to voter suppression. Girl, listen. We've been voting suppression since black people could vote. And women. We have been suppressing votes since then. You know what's crazy, though? A lot of people don't see it that way. They don't see this as voter suppression. And if you have people, white men, and the majority of them are white men, standing outside of a voting center in a poor black or minority neighborhood with a weapon, do you really think that people really want to be bothered with that? Do you really think that some people wouldn't be afraid or would deter them from actually voting? And the Department of Justice said they're aware of these things, but they haven't actually done anything about it yet. That's insane. Not to mention in Nevada, when you look at Nye County, they actually changed the entire system of the way that they vote because they believed in the conspiracy theory that the election was stolen.
Come on, man.
And it took them 3 hours to count 50 votes. Like, it was a disaster. And I'm like, you can't count 50 votes. One fish, two fish, red fish, blue fish. Like, you can't, like, 1 + 1 = 2. Like, why? Why? So could you imagine if it takes them 3 hours to count 50 votes, how many hours it's going to take them to count all of the votes in Nye County? Not to mention they were trying to slyly read out how many votes and who got what votes. And they were going to record it. But the ACLU there stopped that from happening. They filed an emergency petition to stop the count and to stop that from happening. Because they wanted the people to hear, like, if you hear your candidate is not winning, some people will be dissuaded from voting and they'll say, I'm not going to vote. Like, what's the point? My person is losing. So they're doing anything and everything they can to keep people from voting. Everything. And it's crazy. When you see all of the voting, laws and rules that they either overturned or tried to enact to try to stop people from voting. And this is why when people say, you know, voting doesn't matter, I'm like, it absolutely matters. Because if it didn't, and I said this on, shout out to Faraji Muhammad, I've said this on his show multiple times, if voting didn't matter, why are they trying to stop you from voting so much? Like, what is the point? You know, he had to take off. Like, some of these people had to take off from work to stand outside of these voter polls with guns. Like, you gonna miss a day of work to do this? It's something in it for them. It's something in it. Your vote has power. Otherwise, this makes no sense. And it's just, it's not making sense to me. And I'm like, you guys are out there. Like, Carrie Lake is actually winning in Arizona governor's race polls. She's winning. I was like, you really want to vote for somebody that doesn't believe that the election was legitimate, and you've never seen her without a filter? No, I'm sorry. I can't vote for a politician that I've never not seen with a filter. I was like, you on Fox News, where the fuck did you get the filter from? Do they have that? Like, I'm like, you got Valency? Is that what filter is that? Like, it follows you everywhere. Like, somebody who can physically manifest, speaking of which, a filter is not to be trusted. Like, you are physically manifesting a filter and soft lighting wherever you go. What are you, Mariah Carey? I'm not understanding this. I don't get it. And I'm not understanding. Somebody's got to make it make sense. Make it make sense for me. Help me help you. Help me help you. Like, I don't get it. And a lot of the times when you look at a lot of these people, they don't actually have a plan. They don't have a plan. They just say, that's bad. Inflation is bad. But they don't actually give you how they are going to handle inflation. When you look at, like, some of them were saying that they would think about cutting Medicaid and Social Security. Now, the thing that's going around on Twitter is not real. It's fake. So we're not going to spew that. That is false. But they've actually floated the idea. Republican political strategists have actually floated the idea. So I'm like, listen, what are y'all doing? What are we doing? And you can have a difference of political ideology. I'm not that person that's going to say that you can't vote for Republican. You vote in your own best interest. If the Republican plan is better for you, vote Republican. If the Democrat plan is better for you, vote Democrat. I don't have a problem with that. But the issue is a lot of people aren't voting for policy. They're voting because they don't like the other person. We don't vote for anything. We vote against something. And that is not how we should vote in this country. It's a terrible way to vote. You will never get anything accomplished that way. And when you look at Nevada and you look at places like Georgia, Lord God, help us. Let's look at Georgia. Georgia. You mean it's Georgia. Georgia. You mean to tell me y'all would rather elect the Black Paw Patrol abortion avenger than you would Raphael Warnock? How is Herschel No Science Walker, winning in Georgia polls? How, Sway? I've not heard one plan make it make sense to me. All he has done is lie to y'all. This entire time, he's walking around with Chase badge from Paw Patrol, talking about he's a police officer. He's talking about he was top five in his class. That's a lie. Like, everything he said is like an episode of Maury, and we have determined that is a lie. Like, why are we still doing this? Why? Like, his second woman came out and she came with receipts. She kept everything. She kept the receipts, the check, the cards, the books he gave her. She kept everything. She might even have some of his old Q-tips. She has everything. Like, what? how are you anti-abortion until you're not? You're only anti-abortion when it's not you. Like Herschel, it's not making sense. And when you look at people like Raphael Warnock, he actually was one of the people, if I'm not mistaken, that was trying to get the insulin cap passed. Of course, the Republicans blocked that because I don't know. I'm not sure why they didn't want to cap insulin. Who knows? But he was one of the people that put that bill up. Like, you've got to make it make sense. He is a better like, it's not even just about policy. He is a better candidate. Do we even know that Herschel Walker and his seven personalities know what the Senate does? Does he know? Like, I mean, I'm not even funny. Like, seriously, did we ask him that? Does he know? And I heard black people saying, I'm voting for Herschel Walker. I'm like, come on now. Come on now. Like, Herschel was supporting Kanye. He's doing promos with Lindsey Graham. Like, make it make sense to me. And then, of course, the Stacey Abrams, Brian Kemp. Like, make it make sense to me. Come on, Peach State. We could do it. We can do it. I'm hoping the polls is wrong. That's why I don't trust any polls except for stripper polls. I don't trust them. Okay? I think they be talking to all the old people in their house that still got a landline. I don't trust it. They the only people. That's why they only talk to old people, because they be using landlines. And how many people you got landlines? Your great grandmother. Listen, your grandmother and great grandmother. Everybody else don't have no landline. Mm-hmm. That's why. That is why. They be talking to old white women in the middle of the suburbs. That's why. Mm-hmm. And they're the ones. But I don't want a person who said that he's not that smart running for public office. Why would you want that? That makes no sense. That's like if your doctor stood up before you were about to go in surgery and say, you know, I'm really not that smart. That doctor over there, he real smart. He went to school. I didn't really go to school. I'm not that smart. Despite whether or not you thought he was funny and you liked him, you're probably going to say, you know what? Maybe not you. That's the part that I'm not understanding. And when we talk about, let's talk about political, former political candidates. Let's talk about Kanye. So,
Mr. Kanye, you ain't got the answers, man. You ain't got the answers.
Has mental illness. And he openly admitted that he has bipolar disorder. And I said this last week. I don't know if people understand what mental illness looks like. Mental illness, when you are in a mental health crisis, and I can't say that he is or he isn't. I'm not a psychologist. I'm not a mental health professional. But it appears to me that Kanye is going through a mental health crisis. I don't know if he's not taking his medicine. I don't know what's going on with Kanye. Now, that doesn't excuse him from hurting other people's feelings. Your trauma or your mental illness doesn't give you the right to hurt me. It is not an excuse to do so. Mental illness is a very, very hard thing to watch when somebody's going through a mental health crisis. And I feel like a lot of the rationality that Kanye would have, he doesn't have, because he's going through a mental health crisis. It's a mental health or mental health crisis is a very messy thing. It's not a pleasant thing to watch. It's not a good thing to see when somebody's going through it. And so I think that that's a part where a lot of people say he has mental health illness, but like, that's probably a large part of it, because Kanye is not a rational man right now. It's not rational. His opinions might be his opinions, but I think the way that he's going about this, I don't think he would go about this in a way that he would had he not been going through a level of irrationality. And so that's like, if someone, there are people out there that actually believe that they are Jesus Christ. There are, right now. And would you call them blasphemous? If somebody is schizophrenic and actually believes that, or they're having some mental illness that has delusions, doesn't make them blasphemous. They actually believe that they are Jesus Christ. Whereas he probably believes a lot of the stuff that he's saying because his mind may not be completely rational. I don't know if he's going through a level of mania. You know, with somebody with bipolar, they go through mania and they go through levels of depression. I don't know what's going on with Kanye. I can't say, but I will say that that's a huge part, I believe, in his behavior. some of the scariest parts about some of these people in the rhetoric that they spew, like Kanye West, is not Kanye himself. It's the people that follow Kanye. The same thing with a lot of these election deniers. The issue isn't the election deniers themselves, because a lot of them don't actually believe in the rhetoric that they spew. But the people that they spew it to do. And that's the scary part. And that's how you get people that end up at Nancy Pelosi's house. Right? Looking for Nancy Pelosi. So Kanye is Kanye, right? And he has levels of mental illness. But a lot of the black people that accept and are defending Kanye don't have mental illness. They're trying to rationalize someone who is not of a rational state, in my opinion. And that is scary. So I saw somebody who I think is a really cool person. I don't agree with them a lot of the times, but they're real cool. They've been on this platform. And she shared a video of Kanye in the past talking about how much he envies Jewish people. Now, he said he envies them because they get together as a community and he wish black people could do that and they're really family oriented and da 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 and all of this stuff. Now, I'm talking to this person and everybody that commented on that post and everybody that will continue to comment. That doesn't absolve Kanye of anti-Semitism. It doesn't absolve Kanye of saying hateful things about black people and saying things that are incorrect about slavery and saying incorrect things, period. It doesn't absolve him of that. When you hear him say anti-Semitic things, like he's going to go DEFCON 3 on Jewish people, which basically just means like he wants to get rid of Jewish people, that's hateful rhetoric that cannot be defended. When you look at what he's saying he was envious. That gives him motive of why he said what he said. Doesn't absolve him. It actually makes it worse, because at this point it shows he is rationally sound of mind when he says these things, because he's angry and envious. Because if you're envious of somebody, it means you're jealous and angry of what they have. Jealousy and envy will lead you to anger, and anger leads you to irrational behavior and thoughts. You just rationalize why Kanye said what he said. Doesn't make it right, and it doesn't make him right. It actually makes him worse. I don't understand the rationalization of it. It doesn't make any sense. We cannot say that we want black people to be treated in a way when we overlook the eyes and the things that black people do that are wrong. Kanye is wrong. The fact that Kanye didn't get canceled for the things he said about black people is because we continue to defend Kanye. We're never going to stop buying his stuff. We're going to find ways to make sure that Kanye is okay. And we cannot keep doing that. We do have to hold him accountable for the things that he says. And they were wrong. He was wrong when he said that slavery was a choice. He was wrong when he went after George Floyd, and knowing that George Floyd's family can see and hear these things. He was wrong. If y'all are not going to stop him and you're not going to stop buying the stuff, the people have no incentive to do the right thing. Most people don't just do the right thing, especially when money's involved. So if that's the case, they're going to keep doing what they're doing. So we cannot keep doing that. Kanye is wrong. And I think that we need to stop paying Kanye attention, because this is where we get where we're at. This is it. And Kanye is just a manifestation of it all. Yeah, I've used that word a lot today. See, look at me. That's the word of the day. So, yeah. So there's that. Then when we look at the levels of political violence that are going on, and a lot of people are like, we've never seen this before. Were you missing from school that day? Because I don't know if you were missing, but I was there. In the 1960s, we had political activists and politicians who were getting shot and killed, one and beaten, one by one by one. Medgar Evers was assassinated. We had John F. Kennedy was assassinated. Robert Kennedy was assassinated. Martin Luther King was assassinated. What are we talking about? There was an assassination attempt on Ronald Reagan. America, we not new to this. We true to this. This is what we've been doing. and people are going after Nancy Pelosi because you have Fox News is completely demonized her. All those, the Republican politicians have been demonizing Nancy Pelosi forever. And the rhetoric has just gotten worse since Donald Trump. But it's always been there. I think the difference is that now you have more platforms, you have more outlets because of social media where people can actually get together and talk about these things. And speaking of which, now that Elon Musk has Twitter, you are going to see more and more and more of this. You see that as soon as he said the bird was free, people were flooding Twitter with the N-word. They were flooding it. And they actually were set up a slave auction to sell a slave on Twitter. And those profiles are still up. So now it is free speech in the way that it is the wild, wild west on Twitter. I hated Twitter because I just hate the way it's structured. But now Twitter is just going to be this very vile place. Like, it's a place that's scary. Freedom of speech and to be able to say what you want shouldn't be at the detriment of another group, because a lot of this vitriol and all of the stuff that people are spewing and all of this language is causing people to be hurt and harmed. So it's not just freedom of speech. We are seeing people who are reacting to the stuff that people are saying, and people are actually getting hurt. Like, this is not cool. This is not okay. And I don't know how we rectify it. I don't know how we handle it. And so we will continue to see this until something happens. And I don't know. Because freedom of speech, we should all, and I believe that we should all be able to say what we want. But I don't know if people truly want freedom of speech. Because if you can say whatever you want, it means the next person can say whatever they want. Without... And that doesn't mean without repercussion, because you can, with freedom of speech, you can say whatever you want, but there's a consequence for what it is that you say. The scary part about Twitter is, though, that people can hide behind names and faces that are not their own. So there's a different level of this racist, homophobic, you know, xenophobic nature, because we don't really know who's saying it. So that's the part that with social media, it's kind of like changing it, because back in the 60s, we knew who the racists were. They were, it was blatant. Now we have this level of this covert hatred, because this could be somebody that comes and works with you every day and you would never know. Rihanna dropped new music because Black Panther, Wakanda Forever is coming out. She dropped new music. I'm not sure how I feel about it, though. Like, maybe when I see the film, it's gonna go together. Like, it probably be at the funeral scene in the beginning, so it probably make you feel some kind of way seeing Chadwick Boseman. Probably everybody in the whole theater probably be crying. Maybe I'll like it then. But by itself, after 6 years of waiting, I don't know if I like it. I'm not feeling it just yet. I don't know. Rihanna looks amazing, though. She looks beautiful, but I don't know. And then also, let's talk about Miss Beyonce. She had, like, her mother did a gala, some type of gala. And I don't know if it was, like, a fashion gala or something. And so she was there. Her husband, Jay-Z, was there. And I make mention, go out of my way to say that that's Beyonce's husband. Yeah, that's how I refer to him. It's not just Jay-Z, one of the best rappers of all time. He's just Beyonce. You know, I'm in the Beehive, so, you know, he's secondary to Beyonce. But nonetheless, he's still great, but secondary to Beyonce. But Beyonce, she was out there, and she had on this dress, which she looked absolutely amazing. Beyonce is a little thicker than she used to be, but people saw another angle of her in the dress, and people were talking about the dress and how she was in the dress and she couldn't fit it, and Beyonce don't look like she does anymore, and she da-da-da-da-da. Listen, we all age. Beyonce looks fucking amazing. Aging is not a bad thing. Changing is not a bad thing. I think we also need to get rid of that notion too on social media, that we keep showing all these people that show, oh, I'm, you know, this is me when I was 20 and this is me at 50 and they look exactly the same. That's not how it should be. You should look different from you did at 20 because you are aging, and that is okay. And if you don't look 20 at 50, who the fuck cares? As long as you're healthy, happy, and thriving, I don't need to be and look like I did at 20. I was 20 when I was 20 and now I'm not. So I want to look like I do at 50. And whatever that is, it is. And aging, we should start looking at as beauty, because a lot of us are not privileged with the right to age. And I'm going to end on this. I think a lot of people think tomorrow is promised to you. I guarantee you it is not. So for you to crash and brash and bash somebody for aging is the dumbest thing. You are bashing somebody about something you don't have. Because a lot of the people that are talking about her are younger than her. You don't know what you're going to look like at 50 when you're 20. Not all the plastic surgery in the world can make you still look like you did at 20. And even the people that are 50 and say they still look like they did at 20, you look similar, but I can guarantee you there are some differences. And we will not all look 20 when we're 80 and 90 and 100. And that's okay. So let's stop the madness and let's stop the bullshit, okay? And this has been another episode of Millennials Anonymous Podcast. Yes, we will be back again next week. I'm going to do a full election countdown since this will air on Monday and the election is on Tuesday. So we're going to do a full election recap because we got to talk about Val Demings and Marco Rubio. Oh, Lord, 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 Lord. Somebody that voted against hurricane funding and then needed the hurricane funding the next day. Child, let's leave it. And of course, I'm in Maryland, so we're going to talk about Westmore and Dan Cox, and who was a Trump backer. Oh my gosh, he's child. So we're going to talk about it. Okay, we're going to talk about the races in Wisconsin and Michigan. We're going to get to it because Michigan. Y'all have the highest levels of what, like political threats of violence? Michigan. Listen, we gonna talk about it next week. So make sure you guys come back. You know where to find me. And stay safe out there. Enjoy your Halloween. Peace.